to call today and get $400 off your all-laser LASIK procedure. That's a savings of $200 per eye. TLC Laser Eye Centers has over 20 years' experience and performed over 2 million procedures. Let our team help you. For your free consultation, call now. 800-978-1515. 800-978-1515. 800-978-1515. Results may vary.
Today's the last chance for Alabama residents to register to vote in the December 12th elections, and that includes the special U.S. Senate election facing Roy Moore with Doug Jones. Vaughn Hilliard, an analyst, says Moore has basically stopped campaigning.
We haven't seen Roy Moore in now 11 days on the campaign trail. He's been 11 days without a campaign or a public appearance at all.
President Trump tweeting yesterday that despite the allegations against Moore, it would be a disaster if the Democrat Doug Jones was to win that U.S. Senate seat in Alabama. A wedding's in the works for Britain's Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle. Kensington Palace announcing the 33-year-old prince and the 36-year-old suit star will be getting married in the spring. A Cold War-era nuclear warning system returning to Hawaii as islanders prepare for a potential attack from North Korea. The alarms have been mothballed since the Cold War, but it's coming out of retirement next week. This is USA Radio News.
Colonel Sanders here with another important holiday message from KFC. This year, don't get the ones you love some lame, boring gift like a new car or jewelry or toys or expensive electronics or any other junk. Nope, get that special someone what they really want. Exactly! A KFC $5 fill-up with 100% white meat popcorn chicken, mashed potatoes and gravy, a biscuit, a cookie, and a drink. It's a perfect gift for all those important people in your life who get hungry right around lunchtime. KFC, it's finger-licking good. Available for a limited time only. Pricing and participation may vary. Tax extra.
President Trump suggesting that 2005 Access Hollywood recording of him making some disparaging remarks about women is all a fake.
President Trump is known for shouting down the free press. Now, the New York Times says the president is privately questioning the authenticity of that infamous recording in which he's caught in a vulgar exchange with former TV host Billy Bush. On the tape, Trump bragged about his ability to grope women because he's a star. Now, after the recording hit the airwaves during last year's election, Trump acknowledged he made the comments and then apologized. When the recording first hit, Trump called it locker room banter and apologized if anyone was offended.
That's Doug Parrish reporting. Calling hours start today for the Baltimore police detective who was killed in the line of duty earlier this month, as people can pay respects to Detective Sean Souter at a funeral home in Randallstown just outside Baltimore. And the funeral services are set for this Wednesday morning at a church in Baltimore. Souter was gunned down earlier this month in a rough West Baltimore neighborhood while investigating a homicide from 2016. But he was supposed to testify against some corrupt cops the next day. And there were some tense moments on Sunday afternoon. A mall in upstate New York was shut down when a gun accidentally went off. Somebody apparently was carrying the gun outside, and the bullet was fired into the ground, injuring two people with shrapnel, but they're expected to recover.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. Weather today, sunny with a high near 52, northwest wind 7 to 13 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 27, light and variable wind. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 52, calm and becoming south 5 to 8 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low around 38, south wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 57, west wind 6 to 10 miles per hour, becoming northwest in the afternoon. Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low around 30.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is an award-winning show, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and it's NAMI's hour. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in a state, every state in the union, and overseas. Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses, and we try to help people who either have someone in their family, or they know someone, or work with someone who has a mental health issue, or the person themselves who have a mental health issue. And we try to get them proper services and to help them. And we do it through education, by teaching classes. We have a 12-week family-to-family class. We also have what they call a basic class. If a family has someone in there, a child who's under 18, who is showing mental health issues, and that's a six-week course. All our classes are free. There is no charge for anything. We have a support group that meets monthly, the third Thursday of every month, and it is at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, and it's from 7 to 9 o'clock, and you don't have to be a member of NAMI to come to the support group. You can just show up. You don't have to register for that, but everything else you have to register for. If you need some more information or would like to register for any of the classes upcoming, you can reach us by reaching out to 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we have someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you. Today, we're very privileged to have with us Carol Ricard. Carol and I go way back, more years than we care to, each of us care to remember. But Carol is a licensed clinical social worker. She's also a TTS, which I have to ask what that is because I have no clue what that is after. But she's also known as America's Wellness Ambassador and is a dynamic and engaging speaker who brings to life practical and useful solutions to problems. She's a weekly contributor for Esperanza magazine, which Esperanza means hope in Spanish. And that's about the only word I know in Spanish, other than C, that's about it. Carol has also written, I believe, 12 books?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been 12, on stress and wellness. And she's also the creator and host of a 30-minute wellness show on Princeton TV, The Well You Show. And you can visit Carol on welluniversity.com. And you can reach out to Carol, and she'll give the phone number later on.
Yep.
But like I said, it's we go back a long ways, and it's great to see her. And we're probably going to see more of each other when we both go to mental health board meetings. But she's missed a couple, and I've missed a couple.
So we both get there at the same time.
Yeah, we both get there at the same time. It would be great, you know.
Yes, it will be. Yes,
You know, to get on to some of the subject, what is a TTS for tobacco something?
Yes, yes. Very good. Yeah.
What is
tobacco treatment specialist?
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. I'll have to write that down somewhere.
You have to write it down somewhere.
Yeah, because I'll never remember it, you know. Well, my co-host, Tracy Ivey's writing it down,
I can ask her.
We
will. From now on, we will always know what TTS means.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Tobacco?
Treatment specialist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, 2011 I went to I think it was UMDNJ then, or Robert Wood Johnson, somewhere at Rutgers, and took a week-long training program, and pretty amazing.
I know science. I asked you this before. Did you ever smoke?
No, we've talked about this because I know what got you to stop.
Well,
Yeah.
I smoked for many years.
And I think that's why he forgets.
What?
You got him to stop.
No, I didn't.
No, she
didn't. I remember the story he tells, though.
Yeah. You're right.
Yep. I stopped about 28 years ago now.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's
quick story.
They
put me on an operating table, turned me upside down, scraped my vocal cords of polyps, and told me that was the only time they could do it. After that, they'd have to take them out.
Yep.
And with my big mouth, you expect
that's a lot of incentive there.
Yeah, a lot of incentive.
See, Tracy, the story kind of, you won't forget that, will you now? I have pictured Larry upside down.
Yeah, see?
And not talking, couldn't do it. So
yeah, exactly. But anyway.
Anyway.
We all know that there's, as a caregiver to someone with a mental health issue, there's a lot of stress involved.
Yeah.
And I know there's different types of stress for different types of people and what have you. Could you elaborate on some of what they are and, how to handle some of them?
I mean, for caregivers or
just for
in
a caregiver. Yeah.
You know, well, I think what's really hard about being a caregiver is that you're kind of living two lives at one time, right? You kind of are your life, and then you are kind of living the life of the person you're having to take care
of. Right.
And I think I like to describe it like that so you realize how much extra stress. I mean, we have enough stress going around for just one of us. And I think one of the things that happens too, though, besides. Because the thing about stress is the very simple definition is it is our response to a change or a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of us are going to have the same responses. But what's really important about caregiving is that you can get so busy taking care of other people that you forget to take care of yourself. And that is one of the biggest things I see happen with caregivers.
Yeah, and it can get very stressful, you know, especially if the loved one is not doing well.
Yeah.
Or relapses into, you know, wherever they were before. So it can get to be very stressful. And I know a lot of people talking to them through classes that we teach teach and the support groups and so on and so forth. A lot of the people feel it's their fault, you know, and it's not.
It's their fault that they got sick again?
It's their fault that the person got sick in the first place, and it's their fault that they kept getting sick.
Yeah.
And it's not.
No.
You know, I mean, mental illness is a chemical imbalance of the brain. My son didn't raise his hand and say, give me paranoid schizophrenia, because I want it, you know.
You know what, Larry? When I do my workshops, I love to hand out a card. And honestly, I got the idea from Parents Anonymous. But the card stands for... In life, we don't always get to choose the cards we're dealt.
Right.
And certainly I share that one of my cards I would have never asked for was mental illness.
Right.
You know, going back 25, 26, 7 years now. I wouldn't give it up now that I have it, but it's just cards. It's the luck of the draw sometimes.
Sure.
And you're right. I think that's what's so great about NAMI too, though, is that people have exposure to folks like you saying, no, it's not your fault.
Right.
You know, it isn't. That education piece, I think, is so important. You know, and certainly when it comes to relapses, guess what? It's not within anybody's necessarily control.
Right, right. May not even be in a person's control.
No, it's not.
You know.
No. I can tell you that personally because that happened to me this last summer. It was the first time in 25 years that I felt myself, I always like to call it the pit, you know, slipping back into that big black pit of depression. And I live what I teach, and I honestly believe that if I hadn't been doing what I've been doing for my own recovery, I probably would have ended up in a hospital. I wasn't. I didn't.
Right.
But, and what happened was... I believe that we all have a foundation for wellness. And when you live with a chronic illness, one of those, the four corners are your medication, they're your treatment, they're sobriety, which stands for stopping any harmful behaviors. It's not just drugs or alcohol.
Right.
And structure. And what happened was I lost my dog really suddenly in July. And my structure, I didn't know it at the time, but a week or so afterwards, I was so lost. And I did not realize that most of my time in my day was structured around her until she wasn't there. Mm-hmm. She took meds five times a day for her seizures. Right. And it was kind of like I lost that corner of my own recovery. But thank goodness I had enough other stuff to hold me up. And immediately I knew what I had to do. So I started getting out of the house to go to the library. I started showing up at the hospital to go to work just to get out of my house and replace it with something. Right. And it just shows up sometimes. And you can be doing everything that you need to be doing. And then voila. Which is why I believe you got to have a good foundation, because stuff shows up and it rocks your world, and foundations crumble a little bit under stress. And
ironically enough, I was talking to Tracy earlier, and I was explaining how my wife wound up in a hospital overnight, and they thought she had a minor stroke, but she went in on Friday. And they kept her overnight. And Friday night, I go home, and there's nobody there. You know?
Yep.
And it's like, all right.
Yep. You know? Lost.
Your structure.
Like, what do I do?
Structure,
you know?
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, I got to make supper. Oh, I don't like cooking. You know? You know? So I'll warm this up in a microwave, you know?
Yep.
Nuke it, you know? And then it's like, watch television. Well, what would Priscilla want to watch?
Right. Right.
And, it was just so weird.
It was.
And it was only one night. Yeah. Okay, I knew she was coming home the next day, And it was just weird because that was that one night, and it was like I was lost.
Lost, yeah.
Yeah. And I could call my four kids or each one of them or whatever.
But not the
that's
same.
That's not the same.
Nope.
No,
it's when you're – our routines, I think, are really critical to our health and well-being. And when you have one, that you're used to.
Right,
and
right.
then it changes even for one night.
Yeah, even one night. Exactly.
To somebody who – that in itself could have been the trigger – that could have just pulled the rug out from somebody.
Sure, and absolutely.
We know stress doesn't create mental illness, but certainly I feel like it opens the door, it knocks on the door, and sometimes opens it up a little bit for the illness to sneak out a little more.
Sure, I agree.
And I think what happens with caregivers is, I just did a workshop for a women's wellness organization in November, and we did caregiving, stress.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ladies afterwards said, well, what suggestions do you have for that person who's been a caregiver and now they're not? They've kind of lost that role. And
right.
I said, they got to find something to replace that structure right away.
Right.
Critical to their own health and well-being.
It's funny because when I talk to people, I always tell them, I don't care what you like doing. It could be sitting on the back deck looking at the stars for five
yep.
minutes.
Yep.
Reading a book. Go for a walk with the dog. take a ride for 10, 15 minutes. But you got to do something every day
yep.
that you enjoy.
Yes.
That relaxes you. That, it's that takes your mind away from the pressure of caring for this person or that person or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like I said, even if it's just sitting in the back deck, and that's.
And I think the other secret is that it doesn't have to be a lot of time. The secret is
right.
to do it and to do it consistently.
Right. Exactly. It could be 10, 15 minutes and that's it,
Yeah.
Or five.
I was going to say, and I even will say to somebody, all right, so you are so pressed for time, then take 60 seconds, step outside the door, set a timer, for 60 seconds, because that's even just that change of
right.
stepping outside is, and if you're a caregiver, that's the thing that caregivers don't have is time, and
mm-hmm.
I hear say, well, that would be nice if I had time. Well, first off, it's not going to be there unless you make it be there.
Right.
and second off, if you just do 60 seconds, I could promise you that if you could do that 60 seconds on a regular basis, you'll notice a difference.
That's true.
I used to have something on my computer. It was a one-minute meditation. You could just turn it on, and you'd see these water flowing and ducks, and you could just do that a couple of times a day. There was a program for that.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, Tracy, because I did a training for Hopewell Valley Regional School District, and the school district is introducing mindfulness into their elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And so I went in on a teacher's day and did a workshop for the guidance counselors that were going to be at the elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do some research, you know, because not my area of expertise, but what I found was there were tons of different programs for kids in schools. But the one I picked because it was only, you could do it for 1 minute to 3 minutes, you know, and I find that 1 to 3 minutes, we have no excuses.
Yeah, right.
And introduce that to them as a resource, because all these other programs had 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. But guess what? The likelihood of that happening, but 1 minute, oh, we could do that a couple times a day.
And you have to deal with their short attention spans, too.
Yeah. No, I found amazing research when it came to the mindfulness in schools and districts that they had actually introduced this in. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Not only students have short memory spans, though. Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. Me included. you know, with the holidays, if you don't even have a mental health issue, there's stress.
They are.
But more so for the person with a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And could you speak to that?
Well, I think, again, when you think of things that are just stressful, I think of stress as a magnifying glass. And so whatever we have that we're vulnerable to,
mm-hmm.
is going to make it bigger. And so for somebody with mental illness symptoms, those health symptoms, whether it's the voices or the depression or the anxiety, just the very nature of the holidays is going to magnify
right.
whatever that is for somebody. And I think that's important, because for the people that I used to work with, I'd say, listen, it's you're not going backwards, because there's you start to have those symptoms and you feel like, oh my God, I'm going back where I was. You know, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, people that don't want to go back to where they were,
right.
because they're so
right.
far away from that. And it's just really kind of coming back to, I think, the thing that I like to encourage people to do is this self-care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that
sure.
means, if that means only staying at the party where there's a lot of people at for a limited amount of time, then you go for a limited amount of time. You know, if it means staying away from foods, well, give yourself a little bit, you know, because
yeah.
I'm a believer in if you try to do nothing at all, then you set yourself up to fail.
Right.
And I think it makes it even more important to have that support around, too, for people living with mental health conditions over the holidays.
Yeah, and unfortunately, not everyone with a mental health issue has support
yeah.
or family yeah. or whatever, and that's sad.
Yeah. yeah.
Did you?
And well, that the holidays bring up things that are out of your structure. It
yes.
takes you out of your structure, all these occasions to celebrate, and
yes.
maybe you don't feel like celebrating.
Yeah. Or you don't have the resources, you don't have the family. And I think the other thing about holidays that happens is they're connected to loss. Like they get real connected to, you know. So for me, I decided this is going to be my Esperanza article, you know, this Thursday coming up. But I noticed on this Thanksgiving, I went back to an old behavior that I had around the holiday. And that was the first Thanksgiving I had away from family. The only way I could like deal with it was to just convince myself it's just another day. It's just like another normal day, you know? And so
mm-hmm.
I actually showed up at the laundromat ready to do laundry only, you know, to find it closed. And
right.
I'm talking back in like, you know, 1982 and,
right.
And I caught myself this last Thursday doing that, you know, to where I had to make myself call family members because I'm not embarrassed to say this, but there are even a couple family members I didn't call, you know, And it was just because in my mind, I went back to it being just another day. You know, so I call that like that autopilot sometimes we get caught by.
Right, right.
You know.
And it's a shame, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. I mean, I guess I want to write about it because I want people to understand that in recovery, we're always learning and growing, you know. Like, I think in life, we're always learning and growing.
Right, we
so
are.
So it's kind of like you can't mess anything up because there isn't supposed to be any special way about it.
Right.
Carol, going back to the four legs of the stool, what did you mean exactly by sobriety, not just being drugs and alcohol?
Well, it's really about stopping all harmful behaviors. So I'll give you an example. If I was diabetic, am I keeping track of my sugar levels? Am I eating what I'm supposed to be eating? Because guess what? If I have other health issues that I'm not taking care of, then I can't have wellness. I've had smokers. I've had people who had asthma, you know, who were still smoking. Or even, say, blood pressure, you know, and kind of not trying to eat healthy and just kind of not paying attention. That's why I kind of took it beyond just drugs and alcohol, because it really is about stopping harmful behaviors that, you know, might. And if you don't have any harmful behaviors, then guess what? You got a good corner of your foundation. You're one ahead.
You're one out of a million that time.
You know? But,
exactly. Yeah. Chocolate.
Chocolate, yeah. I mean,
I have to have some every day.
Well, and I think is finding a way that you can do it in moderation.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that moderation. And it's the legs of the chair. I like to think of it as the corners of a building. You know, because if you have somebody runs in the corner of a building, that building is not going to be inhabitable. And so it becomes really critical to create that and put it back in place. For me, over the summer, it was recognizing it and then being able to address it very quickly so that I could recreate some structure. It'd be like if you ended up going a couple nights, you know, not just one night.
Right,
it'd be kind of having to say, okay, I gotta do this and this and this and this, and kind of creating a new routine, a temporary routine, but a routine nonetheless.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're known as a wellness ambassador.
Well, you know what, Larry? I made myself a wellness ambassador, and here's why.
You promoted yourself.
Yep, I did. I did. I figured 25 years helping people get well. But the truth is this, that I believe that every person has wellness inside of them. Everybody. And we just got to have the right tools in order to let it exist.
Well, if you have a mental health issue, what are some of the keys to wellness for that person?
Well, keys are, like I said, definitely taking your medications if you're supposed to be taking
your
medications.
Yeah.
But the other thing is actually what we're talking about is I call them life tools, that we got to have tools to deal with stress or emotions or, you know, life, quite honestly.
Right,
And for me, you know, I used to help people in the hospital. I spent 25 years helping people in a hospital, and I decided that people could learn these things so they didn't go to the hospital. And besides, don't get me started, because hospitals don't help people anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So
a hot topic.
I was going to say, that would be a whole show all on its own.
Yeah.
The change
in the
delivery of mental health over the past 25 years.
Well, I know that you and another mental health board member, Emily, are involved with a local depression and bipolar support group.
Yeah.
How did that get about getting started, and how is that going?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, the very first workshop I did for the mental health board back in, I think, 2006 or 2008, I had a young lady come up to me afterwards and say, "This would be great for our DBSA. Would you come do it?" And I was like, "What's DBSA?" And I'd been in the field for at least 15 years, never heard of them. So I did and found out there's this organization, and I think of it as a sister to NAMI, you know, because interestingly enough, it started 35 years ago in Chicago, and a psychiatrist told somebody, put an ad in the want ads, in the, you know, in the ads, anybody taking lithium come to my house for support. She said one person showed up the first week, but kept running the ad, and it just kind of grew. And it grew out of this kind of, again, like NAMI, this, you know, need for support for people.
Right.
And, you know, so DBSA is across the country as well, and it's all peer support. You know, in fact, they just run support group meetings. They don't really have a strong education piece like what NAMI does, but it's really for people living with a, you know, mental health condition or their family members to come, and they're big on peer facilitation, which, you know, is really kind of been the swing lately. So I kind of got involved with DBSA that way.
And where is it located at?
Well, the DBSA here in Hunterdon meets, I think, at the same place, 52 Main Street.
52 East Main Street, the Getting Together Center. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I know, like, during the holidays, but I don't remember the day that Barbara had said.
Was it Friday?
I know it was going to be during the daytime.
I think it was from 12 to 1:30 on Friday.
Yeah.
Because I know someone had reached out to me about, you know, problems and so on and so forth. And I looked up, and I know that this lady works, so she couldn't go from 12 to 1:30.
Yeah.
So I looked at, there's one in Princeton Hospital.
Yep, and Bridgewater.
And there's one in Bridgewater, and there's one in Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're at night.
Yes.
Yeah. So those I told her directions, how to get there and all that jazz, and hopefully she can go and, you know.
It's what's great about DBSA, it's for the person that doesn't have any family. It's a great way of having a second kind of family.
Right, exactly.
And because they meet every week, you know, each of the different chapters, and, you know, it's interesting because I'm going to Union. Union actually has a chapter, so I'm going there to do a workshop for them tomorrow, and I'll be in Colts Neck on Thursday night. Like, they're spread out.
But that's good.
Yeah, you know, it is good. Yeah.
Because, you know, let's face it, it's not just centralized to one county. You know, it's all over the country.
And the other thing that's really cool about DBSA is they have online support groups. On their web place. So I don't know how they do that. You know me, I'm a low tech kind of person. But
yeah, I have a flip top phone, you know, so that day anything.
Yeah. but I think that's important because if you're living somewhere where you're not around, because that is another critical piece of wellness, is being around people speaking the same language as you, so you feel understood, whether that's as the person living with the mental health condition or the family member. You know,
living
with it and needing to have that language be common. So,
When I thought you were going to say something.
I've been to the DBSA in Bridgewater many times, kind of as a support member for someone in my family who has this, and I found it very, very useful.
Yeah, the Bridgewater has a really good chapter, a very solid chapter. And it's kind of interesting, but very similar, all volunteers, you know, and just, I kind of see them as parallels, NAMI and DBSA kind of moving down the road of recovery.
Well, the lady I was talking to was more from like Lambertville area. So Hamilton and would have been a lot closer, you know, so, but anyway, when someone, how does someone deal with the symptoms, like you said, when they reoccur? You know, you're going along and everything's going good, and all of a sudden,
boom.
Yeah. Now, not everybody is as well versed as you.
Yeah.
And have been doing it for as many years as you. So consequently, there's a lot of people. When they crash, they crash.
Yeah. And you know what, Larry? There are some people that's just the nature of their illness too, though. Because I've known people who could miss one day of medications and end up, you know, floridly psychotic because of missing one day of medicines. And then other people. I think what's important for that person is having somebody else around them, you know, and kind of creating that plan. You know, because I'm a big believer in kind of always having a spare tire, a backup plan, you know.
Right, sure.
And that's actually what rep plans can do, the wellness recovery action plans. I don't know. Do you guys do that here? Anybody done that here in Hunterdon? Yeah. I know Nami Mercer does. In fact, he does a call-in, or like a, we were talking about Zooming earlier on the internet and stuff. You know, but I think that's really important. And anybody that I, any patient I worked with was helping them identify, okay, what's your fire drill? You know, you hear the smoke alarms, what's going to tell you, what's your signs that you're on the tracks, and you need to get off or you need to get help. Because I think you have to plan that ahead of time, you know, kind of.
That's a great idea.
I think of it as, you know, kind of like you go back to like a hurricane. You can't just hope for the best.
Right.
You know, yeah, you hope for the best, but you also got to be prepared for your evacuation. What are you going to do? And to me, that's an important part of for people.
Sure.
And I think if you are the family member observing somebody, I think what's really important is to find a way to create a picture of what's going on rather than saying to the person, you need to go see the doctor. I mean, there's things we should say and we shouldn't say.
Right.
You know, and,
exactly.
You know, kind of like if I said to you, Larry, you know, you don't look so good. You're not doing so good. You need to go to the doctor. You are going to look at me and say, Carol, I don't know what you talk about. I feel fine. And so communication also becomes with caregivers, I found, communication.
Right. And how you say it.
Yes.
So I would love to hear an example of that, maybe. That you're creating.
The picture would be this. So let's see, you know, say it was my depression, or I asked Larry, who's having some symptoms, you know, and if you're my family member, I would check in with you. And each time I'd mark it down, like say on a calendar. So let's say a week. You know what? I checked in with Larry for a week. I know the holidays are coming. I know that he doesn't do very good in the holidays. And so some of the symptoms that I would know, you know, that he would be struggling with. And so I might say, Larry, on a scale of 0 to 10, you know, 0 is none, 10 is a lot, where would you put your depression at? What's the highest it got to today? And I'd write it down. And then I'd maybe do that for 7 days. And then I'd say, Larry, I noticed something. I wanted to share it with you. So you let the picture do the talking and not you. You know, and I showed Larry, says, for a whole week, you said it's been in the 8s. Wow. That's wow. I mean, because I think when we try to tell anybody anything about themselves, we're wired to just defend. But if I show him a picture of a calendar of a week, you know.
Right.
You kind of bring those pictures, you make the invisible visible is what I like to do. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was voices, you know, I might check in with him and trusting we had an honest relationship and say, Larry, you know, did the voices visit you at all, you know, today?
Right.
And if he said no, then I'd write no on my calendar. And then I got to the end of the week and I might say, wow, 3 out of 7 days, you know, they did though. And I just show it to you. And let you do with it, kind of process it in your head. That would be an example.
That's a great
Tracy,
example
of how to do that.
And when you do that, maybe they didn't remember that they had 8 all week, or that they had 3 out of 7. Right? It's sort of a concrete reminder.
It's a very concrete. Yeah. It really is taking a snapshot that you can see, rather than rely on just your memory to do that.
Right.
So would you also maybe encourage the person to keep some kind of a diary or a scale where they could be rating themselves?
They could if the person wanted to do that.
Right.
But they might not feel...
Their own calendar.
Yeah. I mean, if they felt like it, but guess what? They might not think that they need it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know, how true.
I mean, if you asked me if I kept a calendar of even my workouts, I'd say no. You know, but...
I do keep a calendar of the guests I have scheduled.
Yeah, Larry's got one calendar. He's good at doing that.
Yeah, that I do, but other than that, forget it.
But I think that's the way that people around that person could also kind of be on the lookout, you know, to help them catch it before kind of it picks up speed.
Well, you know, pardon me, when we give presentations, a lot of times we'll cover suicides. And one of the great myths of suicide is that if you ask someone, yeah, are they considering hurting themselves, they will, or you'll give them the idea. Yeah. And that is totally not true.
Yeah, most important question to really ask somebody.
Exactly, but it all depends on how you ask it, you know.
Yep.
You know, you don't say, you're thinking of shooting yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But you might say, gee, are you given any thought to maybe hurting yourself over the last week or two? Or, you know, just nonchalantly type, you know.
Right.
But you're not going to give them,
way.
Right, because a lot of times a person just wants to talk.
Yeah.
And is happy somebody's asking them rather than they bring it up, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that's been a proven fact.
Yeah.
It's not going to convince the person to do it, you know. So it's
I would say that is still the one biggest myth that, you know, that really does, like, the most disservice to so many people.
Right.
That I think it harms more people than I can think of many other myths.
Right.
Because it's the thing that stops you from doing the very thing that would be able to help a person that's in that place.
Right.
And again, you're right. It's just having somebody. And I think the other thing, too, is very important is validating, you know, like seeing somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So when I ask you that in a caring way, I see you.
Right.
You know, you're not invisible to me.
Right.
Or expendable to me.
Exactly.
Which, when you think about just technology, that for me is sometimes what I get so scared about, too, is as we kind of people bury their heads in their phones, is that, you know, less of that interpersonal kind of stuff is there.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you're absolutely right.
And is there a new way to look at medication?
Yeah.
Wanna,
I have a new way, actually.
Want to elaborate a little bit on that?
So I was sometimes cover at the inpatient mental health unit at Capital Health, right? And I had one young man who came in, and I'd worked with him over the years, you know, and he told me he missed his medicine for a couple days. And he was a young man who had some cognitive difficulties. So, you know, he wasn't kind of like able to process a lot of information. So it occurred to me he loved cars. So I said to him, hey, I was like, I have a question for you. What would happen if you drove your car for a whole day without any oil in the engine? And he looked at me, he's like, you can do that. I said, why not? He said, it'd ruin the engine. You can't run a car without oil. And I said, not even one day? And he said, no. And I said, well, I want you to think about this. People need oil, too. It's called medication. And for some people, they got to add that oil every day. So your medication is your oil. I said, and you can't go even one day without having that oil. Otherwise, you aren't going to run either. And he looked at me and he's like, oh, okay. And I shared that with his mom, who loved, because she, you know, over the years it had been a struggle to get him to even take his medications. And that's how I've started getting people to just think about it. Because you're going to have a good car.
Sure.
And have to add a little extra oil just because the engine, my car right now is burning oil, believe it or not. I'm in the middle of a test. And it's because the engine is using the oil, I've had to add a little oil. And I think same thing happens with mental health. So it's making sure you add your oil every day in the tank, in your engine.
Right. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
It's adapting it to what the person...
They can really understand
They can understand it.
And you know what? All of us, even if we don't like cars, knows that you can't run an engine without oil.
Right.
Well, I should take that back. I'm sure there are a few people out there have ran their cars into the ground without oil.
Yeah. But that's exactly what they did. They ran them into the ground, you know.
You know, but yeah. And so to me, it's making it a little bit more visible for people. So, yeah, that's how I like to now talk about medication.
There you go.
Oil, making sure you got your daily oil in the tank.
You got your oil, right?
Yep.
No, but that's a cool analysis, though. I really think that's pretty cool.
It's worked, you know, it's really kind of, you think about it, it's worked really quite well.
And if you can adapt that to various people's interests or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be oil in a car if the person, say, is a female and could care less about cars, you know, maybe
well,
it's...
Well, no, because listen, they still needed to get around, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, it's more like maybe you could... Just if they like art or you know music or something like that.
See, the thing about oil with me is it's a zero sum game. Yeah. Like you got to have it. You know, I could live without music. I could live without art, but you cannot live without oil in your engine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will run it into the ground, which you will be in the hospital.
So, Carol, I would like to go over the. There were kind of three steps, and I kind of missed the second step. The first step is, you know, what would happen if you drove your car without any oil for a day.
Yep.
The third step might be your medicine is your oil. What's that second one that goes in the middle where you kind of link the two?
Well, the first was what would happen if you drove a car,
right?
You know, for one day without oil.
Right.
And if they kind of said, you know, he said, you couldn't do that.
Right.
And I say, well, not even one day. And then I think there was really only two steps.
Okay.
It was, and some people's brains need medicine, and that is the oil.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you've been involved with the mental health parity law.
Yeah.
You want to speak to that, and what's going on with it? Is some of the good or bad or
whatever?
Well,
I will speak to it. You know, part of my recovery this last summer, I actually ended up having to step away from doing that work even.
Sometimes, you do.
Well, it really, you know, sometimes you have to give up some really important things in order to hang on to your health. And
exactly.
For me, I actually had to give up doing my parody work that I was doing. But I will say that, you know, the whole idea of parody is that really that we treat our physical and our mental health together equally.
Okay.
And one of the most important parts about this whole Affordable Care Act is that it gave people access to treatment who never had treatment before. Because it said that all plans had to provide mental health benefits. And that, to me, is one of the scariest things when you look at kind of what's going on with healthcare. Something, though, I read, Larry, just recently talked about New Jersey and New Jersey being somehow on the forefront of trying to do something here in New Jersey. And I have to confess, I don't know because I've not gone to the meetings. I kind of was just driving here thinking about that. Like, oh, my God, people are probably wondering, like, where's Carol? I probably should go back there and say, listen, I kind of had to step away. But I think what's so important is that with medicine, we just start to treat the whole person, you know, and
right.
That means we treat physical and mental health as equally as important to each other, that they can't be separated.
No, and, you know, no, they can't really. And it's just, you know, I think that a lot of times when they get involved with laws and such, it doesn't always come out the way that the average person would like to see it come out, you know. It's more the way the politician wants it to come out. And I don't want to get into politics, but, you know.
Yeah. The thing about the parity law was it just was so historical because it had taken so many years in happening.
Right.
And being somebody who tried to get medications 25 years ago and get treatment – I was discriminated against for my mental health treatment back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's really just, to me, it's about people having access to help and access to treatment.
Right.
And 'cause you can't get well without it, quite honestly.
No.
But even though Obamacare says that it has to be provided, then you have to find somebody who will take that, who will accept that insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole, to me, my boss used to approach that as a parity issue, you know, because if you had an insurance plan and if you bought into it, even you know, like an employer plan. She said it used to be like if you went to your cable station, they said, all right, we'll sell you 200 channels. You're going to get 200 channels, but you go to use it, and you can only find 30 channels, and none of them, you know, are shows you want to watch. She always said that that was fraud, you know, and that they call that network adequacy. That's kind of the big fancy word to say, how do you find somebody that's either taking new patients or takes your insurance or, you know.
So you have step one, but you don't necessarily have step two.
Yeah. And that's across the country, and even just a shortage when it comes to psychiatrists.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and really kind of, and part of that, though, is because psychiatry has always been not paid on the same par as other doctors. You know, where you pay an eye doctor $250 and a psychiatrist gets paid $85 to do 2 hours of the same kind of work.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's, you know, the discrimination goes all the way that way, and we're just on the...
Yeah, because what I understand is with the population in this county, there should be... approximately, I don't want an exact number, but approximately 35 psychiatrists. We have 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
You have 10.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes when someone gets out of the hospital, it takes 6 weeks to get an appointment with the psychiatrist. And they don't have 6 weeks, you know, because they've been regimented in the hospital to do this.
Yep.
Now they get out and they're, you know, it's... Freedom, you know, okay, I don't have to do all this.
Yeah.
But take 6 weeks to see a psychiatrist or 4 weeks, it's just too long.
Yeah. The whole system breaks, kind of breaks down.
Exactly.
Even in the hospital, it breaks down, you know, because when I used to see people get well, you know, and now the criteria for hospitalization is imminent danger. That doesn't mean that I have bad judgment and I can't be a danger to myself. It means right this moment, am I a danger to myself?
Or others, right.
You know, but later tonight, Lord knows, you know, when I don't take, you know, this or I don't do this and then I kind of end up. And that's just really the saddest, you know, to me. That's like the whole, I think sometimes the saddest is that we don't help people get well anymore. Even if we kept people long enough so they got a little stable, so even to get to that 4 weeks, but it's like we pour fresh sidewalk of cement, and then we push people out the door saying, okay, go walk, 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 and then they sink. And then we get mad at them because they end up back in the hospital because they sank.
You know? It's a catch-22.
It is.
You know. But so I believe you said it used to be. What is it now? Is it... Do they have danger within 24 hours, or as long as they're not in imminent danger, they're out?
The word, you know, for criteria for admission is imminent danger.
Mm-hmm. To yourself or others?
To self or others. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, again, we know that sometimes these thoughts can kind of come and go. It's just, I think back to the good old days, like 25 years ago when I first started working in the hospital, and we kept people, it was before managed care, you know? And so unfortunately that's the world that we've kind of live in and try to live well in.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, why don't you give website or, there you go,
Contact information.
Thank you very much. I know why I keep you around.
That's right.
So Well University is kind of spelled as in WELLYOUINIVERESITY. But even better yet, the Well U Show is an easy place to find me too. And if people go to the WellU show.com, I put all my shows up there so that people can go to one place, kind of has my contact information, my email there, everything, and it's much easier to remember.
Now, does it start with the WellU or just?
Yes.
Oh, so nope, the is part of
the.
It. Okay.
Yeah, WellU show.com.
Okay.
And, you know.
Was there a phone number they could reach out to you?
People could give me a call at 888- and then the word life tools, LIFETOOLS.
Great.
Well, I'll tell you, it's 543-3866.
Yes.
See?
That's pretty good, Larry.
Yeah, well, I have it written down. You don't think I remembered it, do you?
Yeah. No, but if anybody, you know, has a question or needs some help, I mean, I definitely like to be a resource for people. So
sure. If there's anything we haven't covered in the last 2 minutes that you'd like to speak on, or do we do it all?
I think we kind of got through everything there.
Well,
huh?
That's pretty good then.
Yeah.
And you writing for Esperanza, right? The Esperanza magazine.
Yes,
which is open Spanish.
Well, yeah. That's actually a weekly blog post. So that's a great website. Let me give you that website for them.
Go ahead.
It's Hope to Cope. So HOPETOCOPE.com. And they have lots of great articles on their website there.
They do. I get the magazine.
Yeah. And I was telling you, Larry, I'm actually going to be in the print magazine coming up in February. So,
wow. Yeah, that's me, the print magazine. That's what I get.
It's a great resource. And the sister magazine for people out there, BP, as in the number,
right.
Letter B and the letter P.
For bipolar.
Bipolar,
yes.
Right.
Okay.
And they have a website. It's BP Hope. So it's just the letter BP and then hope.com. And I think what's so amazing about that is you get to read about, you know, people who've been successful,
right.
Just all sorts of different people. But it's really like a Maggie feels special because there's a magazine for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
And great research, too. Sometimes I read there. So,
right.
Yeah, and those are just really great resources for anybody. You know, family, person with the lived, or even family members to support.
And I think the more famous people who come out and speak to their mental health issues, Demi Lovato, for one,
yeah.
She's gone to and spoke before the national convention for NAMI, and, you know, a few others that have come out. The more people I think like that come out, I think the better it is to help break the stigma that's attached to it.
Yeah. They even had Bruce Springsteen
back
absolutely. a few months,
yep.
A few episodes ago.
They talked about his depression.
Yeah. I think that's so important because you can see that you don't have to be defined by your illness.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't have to stop you from having a life.
Right. Not everybody's going to wind up being Demi Lovato or Bruce Springsteen, but you can go on with your life. I can't carry a tune in a wheelbarrow, but you know, you can go on with your life.
Yeah,
nothing
has to limit you.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Well,
Carol, I can't thank you enough.
Well, it's been great being here again with you.
And we'll have to come back again. I will.
Yeah.
I will drag you back again.
Oh, I will.
Down a road a little bit.
No, you can't drag the willing.
I hope you have a very healthy,
yes.
happy holidays.
Yes,
and
the same
Merry
to
Christmas
you too.
And a happy, healthy new year. And we'll be back next week, same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 30.